Welcome to Signs of Life, exploring survival of consciousness, brought to you by the Forever Family Foundation on the web at www.foreverfamilyfoundation.org.
I can feel you like an ocean that won't seem to let me go.
Hello, good evening, and welcome to Signs of Life, brought to you by Forever Family Foundation with our host, Bob Ginsberg. I'm Fran Ginsberg, and our show tonight is sponsored by Spirits, They Are Present, a new book by Janet Mayer at janetmayer.net. Tonight's guest is Dr. Jim Tucker, and if you have a question, comment, or would like to talk to our guest, the toll-free number is 888-627-6008. Or you can instant message the studio at Signs of Life Radio on AIM. And good evening to you, Bob.
And hello, Fran. And as you mentioned, our guest tonight is a medical doctor and a scientist named Jim Tucker. And if you ever wondered how science can study reincarnation, if you didn't think that could be done, he'll be talking about it because, yes, indeed, it can be done and it has been done for many years and done effectively. So since we're talking about reincarnation, let me ask you this. Did you ever have a feeling, some sort of an inner feeling in your childhood or later on that you had lived another life?
I cannot say that I've had that kind of a feeling. I've come across people who I've never met before that seemed to look familiar to me. I don't know if that has anything to do with reincarnation or not, but that's about as close as I'm going to get to a yes answer to you.
I guess it's hard to figure. I mean, that could be, you know, like, might fall under a deja vu, you know, type experience.
I think deja vu, when you're experiencing deja vu, you know it's deja vu.
Well, I was trying to think of that, you know, before the, you know, the show, you know, if I've ever, and I remember as a child, I probably never told you this, but I thought that I had lived another life as a rock star. Now, you may want to laugh because, as you know, I have absolutely no musical talent whatsoever. I can't sing. I can't play an instrument, although I've tried and failed at everything. You know, but that I had that that feeling. So that means that, you know, so as I reflect upon it, maybe I should take it. Should I take that seriously? Or maybe it could be a parallel life. You know, we talk about parallel lives. You know, there could be another one of you.
It could be a parallel life because right. There was no rock music previous to your present incarnation.
That's a good point.
But so, maybe your mother gave you too many drugs as a child.
You know what also gets me about reincarnation is that, and I know you've experienced this as I have in our work with the foundation, but very often we're talking to people, and they say, oh, I just had a reading with a medium, and they'll mention a particular medium. And they'll say, well, you know what the medium told me? The medium told me that I had a past life as a whatever, you know, a ballerina. Or they might say, medium told me I had 50 past lives, you know, or I had 100 past lives, or, you know, and then, you know, we talk about mediumship. I mean, mediums, I mean, we see plenty of evidence that they can communicate with the dead, mainly because, these discarded entities retain their own personality and they're able to communicate telepathically. But how would a medium pick up about past lives? Do you have any thoughts on that?
The medium would have to be doing what's similar to remote viewing and looking through to the other dimensions, because we've got to remember one thing. In this dimension is where we have time and space. If you remove time and space, you've got everything happening at the same time, past, present, future, which is what could allow the medium to see the past, even see the present, which a lot of people call psychic then, predictions. And that would be my only explanation for the thing.
Yeah, because the medium doesn't say to the person, to the sitter, that I am communicating with so-and-so in spirit who is communicating to me the fact that you had, you know, many past lives. They never present it that way.
It would be cool if the medium would say, I'm talking to your mother on the other side, and she's explaining to me that in a previous life, you and she were sisters. Now we're talking information.
All right. Well, let me throw this at you. So let's say that, you know, I'm in a reading and I'm getting communication from what the medium would pick up as a discarnate entity. But maybe that discarnate entity is me in the past life. If our souls can split and our consciousness can be, as you say, not subject to time and space, and can be fragmented in many different, you know, places at once, what the scientists might say is evidence of a past life may really be me communicating with myself.
It's still a past life.
Yeah. I guess it is.
Still a past life in this dimension where we have time and space.
Yeah.
I mean, the word past life has to be taken lightly, too, because it only applies to this dimension.
Mm. Before I started reading about, you know, the formal research on reincarnation, I was always very, very skeptical of it, because the only type of research that I had heard of was the past life regression. And even then, I wasn't very familiar with that process, but I sort of mistrusted the suggestion, you know, that the people could have, you know, when they're put under. I never quite trusted the process, although I guess there are, I need to learn, you know, more about that. The other thing that used to come up, which is not entirely true, but my impression was that everybody that had a past life started talking about being somebody famous. You know, I was,
Cleopatra.
Yeah, Cleopatra. Right. I was, you know, and that made no sense to me at all. You know, but I mean, the scientific research. Most people. I mean, they're very rarely anybody that of note. You know, they're normal, you know, everyday people. You know, so I mean, if I ask you flat out, do you believe in reincarnation? Can you give me an answer?
I don't know yet.
Mm.
I mean, I'm seeing all of the stuff that I'm seeing that we want to call reincarnation. I'm happy that we have it and we call it reincarnation, but somehow I think it fits into a bigger puzzle, and that once we get that all that puzzle solved out and we put that reincarnation piece in there, it's going to have so many other relationships to so many other things we do also talk and know, and some things we know more about. Like, for instance, when you do astral traveling or remote viewing, they are all connected. We know on some level all of this stuff is connected. And I think when we get it all figured out, we're going to see a bigger picture on the reincarnation stuff.
Yeah, and we can certainly ask our guests, but I suspect that the same, you know, mechanism that allows for reincarnation is the same underlying phenomenon that allows all these other things that we talk about, like mediumship and near-death experiences and so forth. So I don't know why we should speculate. We should ask the source, so it's a good time to go to our break. When we come back, we'll hear more about the unseen world and about reincarnation from our guest, Jim Tucker. So stay tuned, and we will be back in a few minutes.
The Forever Family Foundation will be hosting its much-sought-after annual fundraising event, Night of Mediums, on 11-11-11 at the Sheraton Long Island Hotel in New York at 7 p.m. Enjoy a scrumptious dinner while seated at a table of only 12 people as a Foundation-certified medium joins you following dessert to conduct spirit communication for your table only. It's a terrific opportunity to not only get readings in an intimate setting, but to enjoy a good meal and help the Foundation at the same time. For reservations and information, call 631-425-7707. Again, that's 631-425-7707. Or visit www.foreverfamilyfoundation.org.
For years, people have been reporting communication from those no longer in our physical world. Historically, science and religion have taught us to ignore such messages. Yet, there is now substantial scientific evidence to the contrary. In response to this, the Forever Family Foundation has developed a sign registry to demonstrate the existence of this other dimension. On our website, people can register signs that they, after passing, plan on communicating to a specific loved one. Upon the registrant's passing, the stored information can be verified by the recipient of these signs. Participants will be taking part not only in a grand scientific experiment, but in providing the greatest gift of all, the knowledge that we survive our physical death. For more information, contact the Forever Family Foundation at 631-425-7707, or you could find us on the web at foreverfamilyfoundation.org. Or to register a sign, go directly to thesignregistry.com.
Imagine seeing spirits are spontaneously speaking indigenous Brazilian rainforest languages. Janet Mayer, a psychic medium, does just that. In her new book, Spirits, They Are Present, she opens the door to her private life in order to share her compelling, fearful, and at times humorous journey, providing evidence that when we die, we simply make a transition to another life. Spirits, They Are Present, available now at www.janetmayer.net, Amazon, and other online booksellers. Order your copy today.
I would like to introduce you to the Forever Family Foundation, a nonprofit organization whose mission is to provide a forum where individuals and families who have suffered the loss of a loved one can turn for support, information, and hope. We believe in the continuity of the family, even though a member has left the physical world. The Forever Family Foundation is a joint effort of scientists, research mediums, and interested people who support the premise that life does not end with physical death. We wish to prove that the bond of the family cannot be broken even by death. We invite anyone who's trying to cope with the loss of a loved one to contact the Forever Family Foundation at 631-425-7707. That's 631-425-7707. Or you can find us on the web at foreverfamilyfoundation.org.
Welcome back to Signs of Life, brought to you by the Forever Family Foundation.
For those just tuning in, our guest tonight is Dr. Jim Tucker. Our sponsor is Spirits, They Are Present, a new book by Janet Mayer at janetmayer.net. That's Janet, M-A-Y-E-R.net. Bob?
And Dr. Jim Tucker is a board-certified child psychiatrist who directs reincarnation research at the University of Virginia's Division of Perceptual Studies. He is also an assistant professor of psychiatric medicine and the medical director of the Child and Family Psychiatry Clinic. He continues the fascinating investigations and case studies done originally by Dr. Ian Stevenson at the same university. Dr. Tucker's research focuses on children's reports of past life memories, and he methodically investigates such cases. He's the author of Life Before Life, a fascinating look at 40 years' worth of evidence. I'm also proud to say that Dr. Tucker sits on the Scientific Advisory Board of Forever Family Foundation. Welcome, Dr. Tucker.
Thanks very much for having me.
Well, let's start at the beginning. So what makes a medical doctor take an interest in something like reincarnation? How do you get into that?
Well, that's a good question. The first person to get interested in it was Ian, and Ian Stevenson. And Ian, he had a very successful mainstream career before he ever got involved with this. But in addition, he had a longstanding interest in parapsychology. And his mother had been into theosophy and had a lot of those books. So even though he had very much a medical mind, graduating at the top of his medical school class, he was always intrigued by the possibilities of parapsychology and life after death. and eventually heard about these cases and spent the last 40 years of his career focused on them. For me, it's a little more indirect, I guess. I had trained at UVA, did my psychiatry training there, and I'd heard about Ian's work, but which I thought was sort of intriguing, but didn't have any particular interest. But then after I finished my training, I went into private practice but stayed in Charlottesville, where UVA is. And then doing very much mainstream work, not giving reincarnation any thought at all. It did not fit in with my Southern Baptist upbringing.
I imagine.
But when I got remarried in my early 30s, my wife was very open to various spiritual, psychic kinds of things, which got me intrigued enough to do some reading. And I just happened to be reading one of Ian's books when we saw in the local newspaper that his research division had gotten a new grant to study near-death experiences. Called them up to see if they needed any help, any volunteer help interviewing patients, just to do something as a hobby besides private practice, and started just coming an hour a week. And eventually, Ian asked me, after a couple of years, Ian asked me if I wanted to take a trip to study some of these cases. And I jumped at the chance and eventually came on half-time and then full-time. So it was never reincarnation per se that actually drew me to its work. It was more sort of the questions in general about spirituality and life after death. And then this just happened to be sort of the niche that I fell into.
And the rest is history.
That's right.
So we talk about, well, you investigate reports from children that talk about specific details of somebody that's deceased, and they believe that they are, you know, they were once this person. What are some of the types of the details that they would report? I mean, are there common details that across the cases that you look for and are easier to verify and investigate?
Yeah, just to give a little background, these are very young children, usually between the age of 2 and 3 when they start making these comments. So very young children who spontaneously start talking about having had a past life, and this doesn't involve hypnosis or anything like that. They're usually talking about pretty recent lives. We have some exceptions, but usually the previous person only died within the last year or two. And they're not famous kings or queens or anything like that, but just ordinary people, usually who live fairly nearby. Some of the kids will say they were deceased family members, and then others will say they were strangers who lived in another location, and if they give enough details like the name of that location, then people have often gone there and found that, in fact, somebody did live and die whose life matches what the child said. As far as some of the common statements, the most common by far is talking about how the person died in a previous life. 3/4 of the kids will describe the death, and it's often unnatural means. 70% of the cases, the previous person died by unnatural means, often violent things, not necessarily murder, but car accidents or sometimes drownings, snake bites, somebody gives a variety. But the majority of them were not people sort of dying naturally of old age. And in fact, even in the ones who do die naturally, many of those are very young. In fact, 1/4 of the natural death cases are under the age of 15 when the previous person died. So what we're seeing the phenomenon with some exceptions, but the patterns in the phenomenon is that the previous person either died young or died violently, and then for whatever reason, the spirit, if you want to call that, seemed to come back quickly and come back with intact memories, which, of course, is unusual.
And some of the most fascinating cases, and you outline some of these cases in your book, Life Before Life, are these birthmark cases. So somebody might have a violent death, and you said the majority of them are accidental. And for instance, they might have a disfigurement. They might have been shot by a gun, and then you might be investigating a case of a child reporting memories, but it, along with the memories, it comes a disfigurement. So can you describe that phenomenon a little bit,
yeah,
or maybe an example of such a case?
Yeah, and those are cases. Ian, before he got into this work, he was interested in psychosomatic medicine, and then these cases fit right in because it looks like physical evidence of past life memories. So these are kids who are born with birthmarks or birth defects that match wounds, usually the fatal wound on the body of the previous person. So Ian published a book of a couple hundred cases of them, actually. And I think it's 18 cases he had where the previous person died from a gunshot wound, and the child was born with two birthmarks matching the entrance and the exit wounds. And then we get these sort of grisly birth defect. There's one case where the previous child had lost the fingers of his right hand in a fodder chopping machine, and then a little while later in another village, a boy was born with no fingers on his right hand, even though his left hand was perfectly normal, which is a very unusual defect.
Yeah.
And then once he got old enough to talk, started talking about memories of this kid who had died, who had had that injury. And so these are often, some of the birthmarks are subtle, but then there are these cases where they're very graphic and very unusual, and they match the way that the wounds that the previous person experienced when they died.
Yeah, and of course, I'm sure you get asked all the time, how is this possible? You know, what's the mechanism that allows that? I mean, I guess the most common theory is that somehow it's a consciousness imprint, or possibly it could even affect genes, right?
Yeah, although actually, the birthmarks and birth defects don't tend to be genetic type of syndromes or anything, but
yeah.
The way that I make sense of it is we know that in certain circumstances, mental images can produce very specific effects on the body. So, for instance, there are hypnosis cases where if someone's a good hypnotic subject, you can say that you're burning them and just touch them lightly with your finger or whatever, and they'll develop a burn there. Or
right.
A famous case where a guy relived intensely an experience where he had been tied up, and he developed what looked like rope marks on his arms. So there are these situations where mental images produce these effects on the body. Well, if this consciousness, if this mind continues after someone is killed in a very traumatic, sort of memorable way, then it would make sense that they would have those mental, the spirit or consciousness would have the mental images with it, carry it to the developing fetus, and then, just like in the hypnosis cases, then produce a physical effect from the mental image.
Yeah. I know you mentioned these hypnosis cases, and a lot of people may not realize that, there's formal research in reincarnation, such as the research that you do at the University of Virginia, but they may have read books about the past life regression cases.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't, from an evidential point of view, I was always somewhat skeptical, fearing, maybe a suggestion could play a part in this. Do you look at past regression, hypnotic type cases as being evidential?
The vast, vast majority are not evidential at all. I mean, the problem is that hypnosis is a very unreliable tool. I mean, even for memories in this life. So you can get some amazing hits where people recall a license plate number or whatever from a crime scene. But then you get a lot of times where the mind just fills in the blanks. And certainly is very open to suggestion, even if the hypnotist is not leading the person. I mean, just the idea that you're going to be regress to a past life, is suggestion enough for the mind to then create a past life. And then once that happens, it's pretty much impossible for someone to know if it was their imagination or if it was actual memories.
Yeah.
Now, that being said, well, a couple of points. One, there are certainly people like Brian Weiss who give plenty of examples where it's therapeutic, and I'm not challenging that, but that doesn't mean, of course, that it's actually a past life memory. But there may be the rare case that is actually a past life memory. I mean, if some kids can have memories of previous lives at age 3 or 4 or 5, then it would be logical that there might be occasionally people who were really good subjects who, you know, could pull back memories from that far back. But again, for the most part, I don't put much stock in it, and unless, again, someone comes up with really verifiable information that it can be shown they did not have access to before.
Mm. You mentioned that the children sometimes start talking about these past life memories very young, maybe at the age of 2 or 3. Do you find that they're just like other children, or do they have a more mature or a different sense about them, or do you find they're just like, you know, so-called normal children?
For the most part, they're just like normal children, although they do tend to be quite bright. We've done psychological testing with intelligence testing with a group of them, and some of them are extremely bright and also very verbal, which I think is actually part of the phenomenon, that it may be that there are a lot of very young children who have these images in their minds, but they're not able to verbalize them enough where it sort of sets them in concrete and becomes a full-blown memory. But with these kids, they're talking early, they're talking about these things, and then it sort of coalesces into what appears to be a memory of a previous life. Mm-hmm. Some of the parents will say that they are more mature than other kids, but most of them are just little kids, except they have these times where they may get more serious and then start coming out with these statements.
So when you investigate a case, I mean, I don't know the actual process. I would imagine somebody would alert you or write to you, or you'd mm-hmm. hear about a case. And I would imagine that the timing is very important. I mean, the quicker you're able to get to your interviews and examining the evidence, the better the case, right?
Well, that's right. And unfortunately, with a lot of them, we get there after the fact.
Yeah.
But then there are exceptions. There was a recent case that I investigated, a little boy in Oklahoma, where, as luck would have it, the whole case got filmed and was on television last year. But a little boy who was saying that he had a life in Hollywood before this one, and which, you know, of course, a lot of kids might fantasize about. But this was very serious to him. He was crying every night to his mother about how much he missed that life. Well, she eventually went out and got some Hollywood books to, her intent was to show him pictures of old Hollywood and see if that sort of stirred up the memories more to get more understanding of them. But as they were going through them, there was a picture from a movie, a George Raft movie from the 30s, and he said, "Oh, that's a movie I made with George," and then looks at another person in the picture and said, "That's me, that's who I was in my last life." Well, yeah. As it turned out, the guy that he pointed to was an unnamed, uncredited extra in the film. But the good thing was that I got to that case before anyone could possibly have known who that guy was. So
right.
We documented all of his statements, and then eventually, actually with the help of the TV people and the Hollywood researcher, we were able to determine who that guy was and find that many of the statements that Ryan had made really did fit for the life of that guy.
Hmm. Those are the dazzle shot kind of cases, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. I know you published many articles, all for the scientific community. What made you decide to write a book and present the evidence to general audiences? I mean, was there a turning point where you said, "Well, I have to get this out"?
Well, I think partly it was Ian had been writing for scientific audiences for a very long time, nearly 40 years, and it did seem like with all this data that it was time to present it to a general audience. Ian was always interested in trying to address the scientific community and not the general public. But I thought, you know, it's time for people to know about this. And to be honest with you, I mean, his books, I didn't feel like necessarily I had a whole lot to add to what he had already spent decades doing. Yeah. But this was sort of a different take on it. And what I did in my book, of course, is it's sort of a greatest hits collection. I mean, I reviewed the strongest cases that he and other people have collected over the decades and then put them in one place for people to learn about.
Yeah. So when you're a scientist who researches, you know, phenomena that often gets labeled as paranormal, whether that be mediumship or near-death experience or out-of-bodies or reincarnation, you think you have a better chance of convincing other scientists that you should be taken seriously, or do you have a better chance convincing the general public?
Well, I think, first of all, you never know who's going to be open to it.
Yeah.
So you do get, I mean, we get emails or letters from various people in scientific fields who appreciate the work or intrigued by it and sometimes sort of admire the fact that Ian and then the rest of us have had the nerve to even attempt it. But I do think that the general public is certainly much more open to it in general. If you look at polling, then, you know, a lot of these things the majority of Americans believe in. And even with reincarnation, which many people view as kind of foreign, it's about a quarter of Americans believe in it. And even 20% of American Christians believe in reincarnation.
Yeah.
But I also think if we can get it more in the general public, more sort of part of the zeitgeist, then the next generation scientists who are growing up with a greater openness to these things then may have greater openness themselves.
Mm. If I was going to try to explain, you know, reincarnation, couldn't I make the argument that, you know, it's telepathic communication between a discarnate entity and a child? Maybe the discarnate entity is communicating, you know, telepathically with the child and imparting that information?
Well, that's certainly not the experience that the children have. I mean, they right. talk about it being something that they remember that was their life. It's from their point of view. And again, they often show a strong emotional attachment to the previous family.
Right.
And in addition, I mean, there are exceptions, but most of the kids show no other psychic abilities. So, you know, you'd have to explain, well, how did this disincarnate happen to get so attached to this kid and convey this information?
Yeah, and I think that's the key there. I mean, it's from their point of view, and they're very, very adamant about it. You know, similar to what, you know, the near-death experiencers, you know, the experiencers will you know, flat out, you know, just there's no doubt that it's 100% that they, you know, went to this other place, you know. So I guess there's similarities there.
Well, that's right. And for in both situations, it's very meaningful to the person who reports these things.
Yeah. Do children ever report multiple past lives? In other words, you know, have you been out on an investigation where they describe, you know, two lives?
Occasionally. It's not common, but it does happen. But usually the memories are much stronger for one life. But not necessarily the most recent. And Ian collected a number of cases, I shouldn't say a number, but a small number of cases where there was the child described an intermediate life, usually of someone who died either as a baby or a very young child, but just sort of sketchy memories of that. Maybe it was so short that they didn't have time to develop more stronger memories. But then they did have stronger memories for the one before. So it is something that happens.
Right. We are talking with Dr. Jim Tucker, the author of Life Before Life, which is a scientific investigation of children's memories of past, of previous lives. We're going to take a break. When we come back, we'll be speaking more about reincarnation with Dr. Tucker. So stay with us, and we'll be back in a few moments.
Is there chocolate in the afterlife? Don't miss the 5th Annual Forever Family Foundations Conference on Saturday, November 12th at the Sheraton Long Island Hotel in New York. This all-day conference features presentations by medical doctor Lee Bounum, offering scientific evidence of an afterlife, and paranormal evidence by noted parapsychologist Lloyd Auerbach. A full sit-down luncheon will be highlighted by a formal chocolate tasting, and guests will be treated to two sessions of spirit communication conducted by certified mediums Angelina Diana and Teresa Caputo. Call 631-425-7707. Again, that's 631-425-7707, or visit www.foreverfamilyfoundation.org.
Imagine seeing spirits are spontaneously speaking indigenous Brazilian rainforest languages. Janet Mayer, a psychic medium, does just that. In her new book, Spirits, They Are Present, she opens the door to her private life in order to share her compelling, fearful, and at times humorous journey, providing evidence that when we die, we simply make a transition to another life. Spirits, They Are Present, available now at www.janetmayer.net, Amazon, and other online booksellers. Order your copy today.
When grieving the loss of a loved one, sometimes a hug is just what you need. Hugs from Heaven are lightly weighted shoulder wraps that are made from the fabric of your loved one's clothing. Your clothing can also be made into memory pillows and sachets. Each Hugs from Heaven is handmade with loving care and is as unique as your loved one's spirit. Visit us at hugsfromheaven.com. That's Hugs, spelled with a Z, from heaven.com. Who couldn't use a hug?
If you grieve the loss of a loved one, a forever photo may truly help to bring you solace. With a forever photo, renowned graphic artist Andre Balog will create a personalized rendering of your dear one in spirit, thereby turning it into a constant source of comfort to you. All you need to do is send a high-quality photo and Andre will do the rest. To get further information and see examples of these beautiful artworks, email Andre at andresphoto.com or call him 323-667-0309. That's E-N-D-R-E at E-N-D-R-E-S-P-H-O-T-O-S.com.
For years, people have been reporting communication from those no longer in our physical world. Historically, science and religion have taught us to ignore such messages. Yet, there is now substantial scientific evidence to the contrary. In response to this, the Forever Family Foundation has developed a sign registry to demonstrate the existence of this other dimension. On our website, people can register signs that they, after passing, plan on communicating to a specific loved one. Upon the registrant's passing, the stored information can be verified by the recipient of these signs. Participants will be taking part not only in a grand scientific experiment, but in providing the greatest gift of all, the knowledge that we survive our physical death. For more information, contact the Forever Family Foundation at 631-425-7707, or you can find us on the web at foreverfamilyfoundation.org. Or to register a sign, go directly to thesignregistry.com.
Welcome back to Signs of Life, brought to you by the Forever Family Foundation.
You're just tuning in. Our guest tonight is Dr. Jim Tucker. This show is sponsored by Spirits, They Are Present, a new book by Janet Mayer at janetmayer.net. If you are a business interested in advertising on our show, please contact us at radio@foreverfamilyfoundation.org or call the office at 631-425-7707. Before we get back to our show, we have a few important foundation updates for our listeners. Some of our supporters write to say they love the radio show. They want to see it continue. They love the work of Forever Family Foundation, but they just don't have extra dollars these days to send our way. Even though we are a 100% volunteer not-for-profit, it still takes a lot of money to do the work we do, and yet we want to do so much more. So this is how everyone can help without sending us money. Go to foreverfamilyfoundation.org and apply for the Visa credit card. Visa will make a donation to us for each card that's taken out, and each time the card is used, a portion of that charge is donated back to Forever Family Foundation. But you don't have to stop there. If your shopping takes you to the Internet, consider shopping at Amazon.com. But first, use the link on the Forever Family Foundation website. And again, a portion of your spending comes back to support our work. Now, if you don't see what you want on Amazon, then sign up with iGive.com and name Forever Family Foundation as the charity of your choice. Then search iGive.com for your items. And when you find what you're looking for, a portion of what you spend is again donated back to Forever Family Foundation. So please take a few moments when you shop to show us that you care. Our Holidays Past raffle with five chances to win a one-hour medium reading is in full swing. Support our work with a $5 for a chance or five chances for $20. Visit our website at foreverfamilyfoundation.org for more information on entering the raffle, or just mail your check in to Forever Family Foundation, 222 Atlantic Avenue, Oceanside, New York, 11572. Our annual conference, Is There Chocolate in the Afterlife?, with feature Friday night fundraiser, Night of Mediums, is set for November 11th. That's 11-11-11, the most spiritual date ever. At the Sheraton Long Island Hotel in Hophog, New York, we have special group rate hotel rooms, and this is a limited seating conference and fundraiser, so book early to avoid disappointment. Again, the website is foreverfamilyfoundation.org. Holidays Past this year, an evening of spirit communication conducted by Forever Family Foundation certified mediums in four locations so far this December. December 3rd, Joanne Gerber will be in Bethel, Connecticut. Also on December 3rd, Janet Nohavik will be in Pompton Lakes, New Jersey. December 10th, Angelina Diana will be in Natick, Massachusetts with afterlife advocate Dave Kane. And December 17th, Teresa Caputo, yes, that's Teresa Caputo from the new TLC Long Island Medium Show, will be in Melville, New York. The seats are $25 for members, $35 for non-members. Reserve now. They fill quickly. Bob?
And thanks for staying with us, Dr. Tucker. And it would be valuable to ask you this question for some of our listening audience. I mean, if a parent has a child who starts talking about a past life, I mean, how should they react? I mean, the parent may not even believe in it themselves. I would imagine that the reaction might be different for different people. But do you have any suggestions on a way a parent could handle the situation in a common sense and logical way?
Well, I think it's useful for parents to be open to what kids are saying, regardless of what it is. And to listen to kids. That doesn't necessarily mean, certainly doesn't mean asking a lot of pointed questions about it, even though that can be tempting to do. And it doesn't necessarily mean buying into it or feeding it or making the child obsess about it, but just being open when the child is wanting to talk about these things to listen and be respectful. And then, you know, we'll often encourage parents not to ask a lot of pointed questions, but just, what else do you remember, or something like that. It can be helpful for parents to know that the kids almost always stop talking about these things by the age of 6 or 7. So, you know, we get emails or letters from parents who are quite stressed or upset because their kids seem so upset about these things. But we reassure them that it almost always passes, and it can, when it is going on, even, you know, a lot of American parents are sort of skeptical about the whole idea of past lives, but it can be helpful to say to the child, well, maybe you went through these things before, especially like with a violent death. I know that was hard, but now you're safe with us in this lifetime, and all those things are in the past. And now you're just going to be here with us, and everything's going to be fine. So it's important. Sometimes the kids are confused. In fact, they'll even use the present tense when they're talking about what seem to be memories. But just reassuring them that those things are in the past, and helping them get more fully invested in this life. Yeah. And then a lot of times, once the kids do start school, they do get more involved and invested in this life, and then the memories fade.
Mm. Would you mind taking a call from one of our listeners?
No, of course not.
Okay.
Okay, we have Tracy on line three.
Tracy, are you with us? All right, well, we'll come back to Tracy. You know, it sounds like, Dr. Tucker, that the advice you were just giving, that sometimes you have to wear two hats. You know, you have to, there's your hat as the investigator and the scientist, but then you might also be dealing with some trauma, you know, from in the family. So is that sometimes a conflict?
I mean, well, it's not necessarily a conflict, but it is certainly something that is important. So, yeah, I mean, you know, being a child psychiatrist, I hope I'm attuned to the emotional issues that are going on while at the same time, you know, trying to determine exactly what has happened.
Mm. Do you ever wonder why, you know, it's a relatively small percentage of children that report past lives? I mean, as opposed to, you know, being more widespread, is it a cultural thing? Is it more prevalent in other societies and cultures?
Well, it's certainly easier to find cases in cultures with a belief in reincarnation. But that doesn't necessarily mean that the cases are more common there, because in those places like India or Thailand or whatever, people will talk about it. If there's a good case, the word spreads. Whereas here, the families are often embarrassed to tell anyone. In fact, I mean, we'll talk with parents where the grandparents don't even know what the child's been saying.
Mm.
But I do think that being said, that the cases may well be more common in those places, and it may be that here, with our general unawareness of the possibility of past lives, that parents don't notice, or just laugh off what the child said so the child learns to be quiet.
Yeah.
A lot of the Asian parents actually try to get the kids to stop talking about these things for a variety of reasons, but they do believe what the child says. So they respect it even if they're trying to get the kid to stop, whereas with a lot of American parents that would be different.
Mm. I think that there appears to be a greater number of psychic children today. And I don't know, as a matter of fact, I think that, you know, the parents, sometimes they go to the extreme. I mean, the parents could be harmful. They try to get the kids to perform, you know,
mm-hmm.
like stage mothers, you know, which I don't think is a good thing. But also, of course, you know, people are more and more familiar with near-death experiences, which has gotten a lot of attention lately. Mm-hmm. Do you think that, like, NDEs are more widely accepted in the scientific and medical communities of late than reincarnation, or are they equally open to that today?
No, I think people are more open to near-death experiences. I mean, it's certainly recognized as a phenomenon now. Now, of course, mm-hmm. people can debate what the cause of it is, but certainly, I mean, I think most people in medicine are aware of near-death experiences, whereas most people in medicine, I assume, are not aware of this phenomenon of young children who spontaneously start talking about past lives.
I guess you have more work to do.
Well, maybe so. I mean, the other part of it is, of course, that our culture is more open to the idea of the afterlife, and which can be fairly consistent with Judeo-Christian kinds of beliefs, as opposed to reincarnation, which, you know, seems very foreign to people.
Yeah. Do you think that psychic phenomena in general, do you think it's a mistake for people to attribute all, like, psychic phenomena as being spiritual in nature? Some people will say to you, well, that they don't see the difference. If it's psychic, it's spiritual. I mean,
That's been sort of a big debate in our field, even in mediumship, really, where is it all the talents of the living, or does it involve the deceased? Certainly, people can have psychic abilities just because the brain may be able to do things that we're unaware of. But, I mean, my own personal view is that there's more to it than that. There is what we might call a spiritual component that is more about just the abilities of the living.
Yeah. Well, you know, in mediumship, I think, in my view, I mean, there seems to be a clear distinction between psychic phenomena and communication with a discarnate entity.
Yeah.
I mean, a psychic ability may be something that we're all, you know, born with, but, you know, the evidence, I guess it's a question of where the evidence is coming from, you know.
Well, that's right. I mean, I agree with you, but there are people who would argue that mediumship may be more complicated than it appears. The medium certainly has psychic abilities, and then especially in the old days with the trance mediums, they then, in their minds, create this sort of deceased entity that's giving them this information, but really it's that they're picking it up through psychic abilities.
Mm.
I mean, it sounds convoluted, and in a way it is, but this whole idea of sort of super psi, that the mind is capable of more than we know, so it's not really, you know, dead Aunt Susie that's saying these things, but just the medium picking up on them psychically. I don't buy that, but that has been a legitimate argument in our field for a long time.
Yeah, it certainly has, and you know, but as you sort of hinted at, sometimes the super psi explanation is more incredible to believe than the spirit communication.
It gets pretty convoluted. I mean, there are a lot of cases where the medium doesn't say anything that the sitter who's there with him doesn't know. So in that case, you could say, well, maybe it's telepathy. But then there are plenty of cases where they do come up with information that person doesn't know. So you've got to move beyond telepathy, and you know, things start getting pretty convoluted.
Right. So I'm not going to ask you what you believe in personally, but what I'll ask you is that, you know, the Jim Tucker, before you started your research in reincarnation and the Jim Tucker now, I mean, has the work changed your personal thought process at all?
Well, it has made me more, beyond open to. I do believe more strongly that there is more than just the physical universe. I do think there is this consciousness component, and I think there's good reason to think that. And then, you know, once you accept that, then of course you have to be open to a lot of things like consciousness continuing on after the physical brain that is housing it or transporting it dies. I think the universe is more wondrous than sort of the mainstream materialist science view holds.
Yeah. You mentioned before that when you were giving, you know, some advice to, you know, to parents, that that, you know, it sort of goes, the memories go away, the memories seem to fade. Do they always? I mean, or do sometimes, you know, even in adulthood, people still have that strong recognition of the past life?
Well, they don't always fade. Almost always, the kids stop talking about these things, and we have thought that they forgot. But recently, one of our colleagues, Erlander Haraldson, he went back and interviewed adults who had been studied when they were kids, when Ian had studied them a long time ago. And many of them said that they still had memories. The problem was some of the memories that they gave had never been reported when they were kids, which makes me think they may think they remember, but actually they don't. That over time, sort of their memories have gotten confused. But there's certainly, I mean, there are some cases, especially ones where the previous family and the child's family maintain a connection, where the child does seem to have active memories, at least into the teen years, and probably in some cases beyond that.
Yeah. Do the children ever describe a time in between, you know, a life in between, like before their reincarnation?
About 20% of kids will describe events that happen between the death of the previous person and the birth of the child. So most don't, but then a fifth of them do. And they can vary. Some will talk about sort of hanging around where the previous person lived or died. They may describe events from the previous person's funeral. There's one girl in Thailand who gave a lot of details, but she complained that her ashes had been spread rather than buried the way she wanted after she had died. And when the previous person was tracked down, it turned out that the daughter of the previous person had gone to bury the woman's ashes under the bow tree at the temple complex where she studied. But the root system of the tree was so extensive she wasn't able to bury them, so she spread them instead. So that's a case of where you've got actually a verified memory of events between lives. And then you'll see some kids who will talk about going to other realms like heaven. In fact, the American kids may use the word heaven. And sometimes engaging with spiritual-type beings, sometimes seeing other people as they're dying. And then some will talk about either being guided to their next parents or actually picking out their next parents for their next life.
Well, we have been talking with Dr. Jim Tucker. The book is called Life Before Life, a scientific investigation of children's memories of previous lives. If you want to read more about these fascinating cases, pick up the book. There is a link to the book on the Forever Family Foundation website, an Amazon link. I know that you still have an active blog, Jim.
No, it's quite inactive, actually.
Yeah, okay. What's the best way for people to reach you, besides Googling you?
Well, that's a pretty good way. We certainly got our website, but it's got one of these horrendously long university addresses. But
yeah,
if they put in Jim Tucker and the University of Virginia, they can certainly find me that way.
Okay. I thank you so much for joining us, and I know that you're hard at work at putting out another book, and we look forward to that and having you back. And thanks so much for joining us, and we look forward to speaking with you again soon.
Well, thanks for having me. It's been fun.
Thanks. Good night.
We now ask our listeners to please join us in our Healing Energy Circle prayer. May the universe create a channel of healing energy from our participating listeners, sending that energy to those who are in need of recovery of the physical body, spirit, and mind. As we visualize the healing light upon Vicki Steffi, Judith Lockman, Wendy Lippo, Kathy Ward, Nick Hargraves, Michael Tim, and anybody else in need of healing. Now let's give energy of love and gratitude to the waters and all the living creatures in Mexico Gulf by praying like this: to the waters, whales, dolphins, pelican, fishes, shellfishes, planktons, coral, algae, and all creatures in our Gulf of Mexico. I apologize. Please forgive me. Thank you. I love you. That was by Masuro Omoto back on May 9th, 2010.
Remember,
it's time to say
our loved ones are only a heartbeat away.
And science is going to prove it.
Good night, everyone.